WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Linda Kenyon. Rescue and recovery operations continue in Florida following Hurricane Milton. CBS's Bradley Blackburn reports.
This crew from North Carolina had been helping in recovery there from Hurricane Helene, now on the ground in Florida.
It means a lot when you go someplace and somebody comes up to you and they say, thank you for what you do.
President Biden has promised federal help will keep flowing to Florida.
We're going to do everything we can to let you help you pick back up the pieces and get back to where you were.
The president plans to visit the storm zone Sunday. Bradley Blackburn, CBS News, New York.
Aurora, Colorado welcomed former President Donald Trump yesterday.
In Aurora, multiple apartment complexes have been taken over by the savage Venezuela prison gang known as Tren de Aragua.
The city's Republican mayor also welcomed Trump into town, but for a different reason.
That narrative is not accurate.
Mayor Mike Kaufman says the crime for migrant gangs was limited despite Trump's repeated accusations about his city.
There's an advantage politically for, quite frankly, the former president to run this narrative through the November election.
CBS's Nicole Skanga with that report. Boeing says it plans to cut 10% of its global workforce amid a machinist strike. KARO-TV's Madeline Attili is at the picket line in Seattle.
Those out here on the picket line, they say this does not change their course. In fact, one employee texting me, without us, there is no Boeing.
Israel is warning residents in South Lebanon not to return home as fighting continues with Hezbollah, the BBC's Jonathan Head reports.
This warning to Israelis that they should stay away from army bases in northern cities may be intended to remind them and Hezbollah supporters that it still has the capacity to inflict significant damage. It echoes Israeli accusations against Hezbollah that it conceals its fighters and weapons in civilian areas. Hezbollah also warned that Israel had seen only a few of its strikes yet, a reference to the tens of thousands of rockets and missiles it's believed to have stockpiled.
The Los Angeles Dodgers took down the San Diego Padres to advance to the National League Championships. CBS's Lauren Posen.
This was the outcome Dodgers fans wanted to see happen. They came here, they entered the stadium with butterflies, and left with big smiles on their faces after the huge win.
How was it?
It was great, and it was my very first game, so it was awesome. Yeah,
it was great. It was great. I knew we were going to win. We're the Dodgers. We're the best team. We're going all the way. Yeah, baby. Yeah.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Farms and livestock operations are polluting the Mississippi River Basin like never before. As Mike Moan reports, a possible solution may be found out east.
Broader efforts to reduce harmful nutrients from reaching the Gulf of Mexico have largely failed. Mesa Khan is the former policy director at the Mississippi River Network. She says there isn't a lot of coordination among states and key agencies that are linked to this large source of water in establishing an effective model.
The way that we operate right now is very much a state-by-state kind of choose-your-own-adventure.
However, environmental observers point to an initiative to remove pollutants from Chesapeake Bay out east. For nearly 15 years, it's included a legally enforceable multi-state pollution quota, one of a select few in the nation. However, officials monitoring that program say even with marked improvements, they're still not meeting certain reduction targets, adding that other changes are needed. Any setbacks aren't deterring Midwestern organizations from urging federal government officials to spur a similar pollution quota covering all states along the Mississippi. Alicia Vasto of the Iowa Environmental Council says they'd appreciate a little more urgency.
Without that, I think we're kind of rudderless in the ways that we're trying to address pollution.
An estimated 60-80% of the nitrogen flowing from the Mississippi Basin to the Gulf originates at farms and livestock operations. Chemicals commonly used to grow crops and fertilize lawns can cause algae blooms and die-offs that rob waters of oxygen and suffocate aquatic life. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. This story was produced with original reporting from Bennett Goldstein for Wisconsin Watch.
This is Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. Some sprinkles or light showers today, otherwise mostly cloudy, highs near 60. Partly cloudy, 40 tonight. Chance of showers for Sunday, quite breezy with highs in the mid-50s. And northwest winds up to 35 miles per hour. Monday, sunshine and 52.
Right now, it's 41.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, we're going to talk to Kelly Robinson from the Human Rights Campaign. Hour number two, donating blood, more important than ever. We're going to talk diversity. I hope you'll join us.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. You're listening to 93.5, The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with Mr. Aaron Zommer, our producer and engineer. It is Friday, October 11th, 2024. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite. Glad to have you along here on a TGIF edition. 6 minutes past the hour of 12 noon. Mr. Zommer, it's a beautiful day outside. Going to be a warm one up in the 80s for most of Wisconsin, at least those of us here in the southern part of the state, and then cooling down, just the exact kind of weather you like over the weekend.
Indeed, indeed. And you might be lucky enough, for those of you outside the major cities, if you didn't catch it last night, you might still be able to see Aurora Borealis, not yes. contained entirely within your own kitchen, but outside.
Right. Outside. And a great place to see that, of course, is outside the city lights. And I'm going to go right to our first guest this morning, or this afternoon, rather. And by the way, Brady Ewing, former three-time Big Ten champion, captain of the Wisconsin Badger football team, and spent 3 years in the NFL, will join us at the bottom of the hour. But right now, out to the same hometown, the old Richland Center, home of WRCE there in Richland Center, and joined by a good friend of mine, happened to be my former boss, or one of them as well, former Senate Majority Leader for the state of Wisconsin, Republican Dale Schultz. Dale, thank you for kicking off the show and taking time to join us today. Before we get into the news, you still own your farm, family farm out there in southwest Wisconsin. I think that'd be a great place to catch the Aurora Borealis.
Well, I certainly hope so, because tonight, after going to the blues concert in town, my wife and I are planning on heading out there. We've seen it out there before, and it is a good spot, and hopefully it'll be clear.
Yeah, looking forward to it. For those who have never seen it, get out there and enjoy it. Well, Dale, I've known you a long time, used to work for you, and you continue, even after you're out of elective office, to make headlines. About an hour or so ago, you joined a former talk show host and of the Bulwark as well, Charlie Sykes, along with, I know, a good friend of yours, retired Wisconsin Court of Appeals Judge Dave Dininger, making a big announcement today that you are endorsing Vice President Kamala Harris and Governor Tim Walz for President and Vice President of the United States, respectively.
That's right, Todd. After 50 years in politics, 32 years in the state legislature as a proud Republican, I am throwing my support to Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in their quest for the White House.
I think this is big news, and not just because we know each other. I know you're a humble guy when we talked to each other about your time in office, but it was undeniable, Dale. The reason this is a big deal, I believe, for you and Judge Dininger, and quite frankly, former Sheriff of Iowa County, Steve Michek, a Republican as well, that there's a lot of people that voted for you, that admired you while you were in office for various reasons. And I think there's a lot of folks out there, particularly in rural Wisconsin, western Wisconsin, who are like, you know what, I'm still a Republican, at least the same kind of Republican that Ronald Reagan was and Tommy Thompson, at least during his time as governor, will set aside his current iteration of himself politically. But there's a lot of people that are like, am I the only one out here that feels this way? And that's why I think it's so important for you, and I'll let you speak for yourself. Why did you decide to endorse Kamala Harris and Tim Walz now? And was there some sort of a flashpoint that just said, now's the time I got to do it?
Well, first of all, my friends, Sheriff Mitchick and Judge Deininger, are exceptional people who were popular for many years in their own right in their respective counties. And I always admired their leadership. And I'm proud to join them in hopefully sending a message to our friends and neighbors in southwestern Wisconsin that, you know what, it's okay to sometimes be an American before you are a partisan. While we may all be proud to be Republicans, we're more glad to be Americans. And the American dream, I think, is at risk. You know, you look around us and all you see is drama. Drama that is about no hope and only seeks to promote misery, misery that can be exploited. And I think that's wrong, because politics, as you've heard me say many, many times, is about hope. And then when we finally get that message out there, we have to be concerned about delivering. And I think Kamala Harris and Tim Walz are two people who share that idea about politics, about listening to people, understanding what is motivating them and making them afraid, and reassuring them it's going to be okay, and reassuring them with specific plans that address the kinds of concerns that they have. And other two gentlemen, as I mentioned, have a history of doing that, and I'm proud to join them. And I hope people will take this with the idea that, you know, they aren't alone, that there are others who are concerned, a lot of other people. I talk to a lot of people, and I hear it over and over again. And we want to make a difference, and we want to be at the table when decisions are made. And you know what? We're just not satisfied with a steady diet of cats and dogs and false information about horrific hurricanes that are hurting our friends and neighbors, and in my case, family, in the southeastern part of the country.
Talk to us a minute about that, Dale. Was that the thing, or what was the thing that said, I got to go public with this, and I have to make a formal endorsement?
Well, I think it's a combination of factors, and I want to be candid. Listening to my friend Sheriff Mitchick explain in Ripon why he was making the decision he made was a powerful influence. I've also grown more and more concerned about the fate of agriculture. It's tough times on the farm right now, and there aren't many farmers left, it seems. And I'm worried. There are still a lot of farm or food processing businesses in our part of the state, and they're not going to exist without farmers. So I see that. And then on top of that, I see just the most despicable use of people who are suffering a lot for political purposes. Todd, as you know, we spent a lot of time working with people in floods, and those floods, as terrible as they were, as much as they caused suffering, are nothing in comparison to what's happened to our fellow countrymen in the southeastern part of the country. And this past week, my wife's niece, who had just been married the week before, flew into Tampa right before the forecast changed, and that Tampa would be the you know, the direct hit of the hurricane. And man, I mean, suddenly it took on a very, very personal feeling for my whole family. Mm-hmm. And I just said, you know what, that's it. I've had enough. It's time to stand up and point out to people that Donald Trump should never, ever, ever be allowed anywhere near power, because the lack of humanity is just that significant. People need to know they can count on their leaders.
We're talking with former Republican Wisconsin State Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz. First interview after having announced about an hour ago, along with Charlie Sykes and former Wisconsin Court of Appeals Judge Dave Donier, that he is endorsing Kamala Harris and Tim Walz for president and vice president of the United States. Dale, I think that what you just said, and for those people that didn't hear our coverage last week of the vice president and former Republican representative, Congresswoman from Wyoming, Liz Cheney, in Ripon when former Iowa County Sheriff Republican Steve Michik joined them. Michik said, you know, as a law enforcement guy, I voted for Trump in 2016 because I thought he was going to be tough on, you know, tough on crime. He goes, boy, did I come to regret it. And he made the point that anybody who's in law enforcement or supports law enforcement, simply you cannot vote for Trump, that his actions on January 6th or what he didn't do on January 6th, in Michik's words, were disqualifying, quote unquote. Do you share the similar feeling?
I do. And I'd like to point out Liz Cheney has made the same comment. Participation, being there, cheerleading, what happened on January 6th is something that should bother every American. What it means to be an American, what it symbolized, you know, was never more starkly put before us. I mean, to see a mob batter their way through lines of police, injuring and killing those individuals to break into the Capitol was just mind-blowing for me. Mm-hmm. Not since the War of 1812 has our country suffered such an attack. And I'm just proud of the fact that Liz Cheney right away stood up and said, you know, this is probably one of the most important things I'll ever do. A real inspiration. Mm-hmm. And a real leader.
Yeah. Talking with Dale Schultz right now, former Senate Majority Leader, about his endorsement of Harris Walz on the ticket. One of our listeners, Matt from Menominee Falls, listening in on WAUK, says, ask Dale about voting for the rest of the down-ballot Democrats. Dale, what is your feeling on that? Other folks like Derek Van Orten, who were also there on January 6th.
Well, let me speak to Derek Van Orten, first of all. As Liz Cheney said, being there is disqualifying. And the last time I checked Facebook, Derek Van Orten was there. And I think that pretty much says all I have to say about Congressman Van Orten. With respect to voting down ballot.
30 seconds left in this segment. Go ahead.
Look, Harris and Walz are going to need folks to help implement a positive, joyful agenda for all of us. And without that, I think we're going to see an exploitive, negative image of ourselves reflected back on the nightly television. And I don't want that.
Former State Senator Dale Schultz, Majority Leader. Is he still a Republican? Don't answer, Dale. Come on back. You'll hear it right here on the Todd Allbowles Show on Civic Media.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, the Chippewa Valley's home for Matt Nair on air.
The Dom Salvia Show.
And Egan Walkoff from Wisconsin Native Vote.
20 years ago, I moved to a suburb of Milwaukee. I went to register, and the woman was like, you're Indian? Indians don't vote. You can't vote.
What?
So when I'm talking to a group of Native Americans, did I tell them that story? And they're like, what? And that gets their dander up. And I'm going to go vote for sure.
Absolutely.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
This narrative that the immigrants are coming to get you, that's fiction. Look at criminal charges in your community. And look how many of those people who have been there for years, if not decades, and how many of those people are new immigrants. And even a smaller percentage of how many are undocumented immigrants. It's not happening. It would be like going to places and say, well, you know what? I'm running for Congress to stop the zombies.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is 93.5 The Tap.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
He'd say you've got to stand for something. Or you'll fall for anything.
Welcome back to the Todd Albaugh Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 21 past the hour of 12 noon. Dan Schaefer, the Recombobulation Area's founder and veteran Milwaukee journalist, has joined Civic Media as political editor. Dan will continue to edit and write for the popular Wisconsin and Milwaukee political news publication while also helping shape the voice of Civic Media's political coverage. Civic Media pleased to announce the addition of the Recombobulation Area to its growing Wisconsin media network, the first non-radio acquisition since its founding in 2022. Welcome back to the program. We are talking with former state senator and Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz, a Republican. At least that's what he was when I worked for him. Great music there, by the way, Mr. Sommers. Great to have someone standing up. That's the kind of guy that Dale's always been since I've known him. But Dale, we teased it. Let's answer the question. Do you consider yourself still, do you call yourself a Republican?
Absolutely. A proud Republican. A Republican that reflects Abraham Lincoln's leadership, hopefully, for the Republican Party at its founding in Ripon, Wisconsin. It reflects the kind of leadership that President Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt, gave this country when he did so much for conservation. And Dwight Eisenhower, as he thought about what we could do to prepare for the future as he built infrastructure. And yes, even my good friend Tommy Thompson, who I disagree with on this matter, but who brought people together. And that's the key. I think we need to come together in this country. I think Kamala Harris has demonstrated that, certainly during this hurricane. And, you know, when I think about Tim Walz, I'm thinking about a bro, man. Here's a guy who, like me, likes to carry a shotgun and walk along behind a couple of fine pointers and you know, fill the larder for the long, long winter.
Dale Schultz on his announcement today that he is joining retired Judge Deininger along with Sheriff Michick of Iowa County, former sheriff there, as Republicans who and conservatives who are now endorsing Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. Off the text line, L.A. Tom listening out in Los Angeles saying simply, thank you, Dale. Let's go to the phone lines quickly, 855-752-4842. Mark in Prairie du Sac. Mark, thanks for calling. What do you got?
Yeah, thanks. It's Mark from the SAC. And God bless Senator Schultz for his announcement here that it's kind of the baseline for me that I've been challenging Republican candidates to answer the question, you know, do you think, that condemn the maintenance of the people that maintained that the election of 2020 was stolen, the fake electors conspiracy, and the insurrection of January 6th, which was not just a mild thing, you know, just a peaceful protest. It was a violent attack on the Republic. And thanks to Senator Schultz. I mean, that I wish he was still there rather than getting driven out of the party by the and he's probably glad to be out of there. I mean, frankly,
well, Dale, are you? Are you glad to be out of there?
well, first of all,
I get out and enjoy the hunting.
First of all, after 32 years, I think most people can understand a desire to go someplace else. I don't feel like I was driven anywhere. It was time for new leadership. We have a terrific crop of young leaders in this state that are going to, I think, do great things. It's kind of Mark to say those things about me, but no one has to feel sorry for me in any shape, way, or form. I really feel like I got the world by the tail. And yep, once in a while, my dog Moses and I enjoy a walk outside and a long conversation.
855-752-4842. Back to the phone lines. One of Dale's former constituents in the big town of Yuba in Richland County, Lee in Yuba. What do you got?
Hi, I want to thank Dale for his stance. I know he's a good conservative. I don't know about Republican anymore, but the party has changed so much. But it's people like him that I think will help to save our republic. I'm a veteran. I'm not a fool or a loser or anything else the draft dodger might say. But I think he's right on when it comes to saving a republic. If things were reversed, I would do the same as he did. So I want to thank him so much for his stance.
Thanks so much, Lee. Dale?
You know, Lee, you're a terrific individual. And while we don't agree on every issue, we sure have a great time when we get an opportunity to wet a line and catch a few fish. And I look forward to those days more than you know, because I always feel like I have the opportunity to impart some wisdom and to receive some. And you know what? When we all do that, life's a lot better. And if our government could learn to do it, the possibilities are limitless.
855-752-4842. Let's go to WMDX. Matt in Middleton. Matt, if you can make it quick, go ahead, please.
Hey, Todd, I just wanted to bring up this. You guys talked about hope earlier, and it's about Russia and Putin. That's some of hope and how everything's bad and it always will be. And that's similar to what the Republicans under MAGA are campaigning on. You mentioned it earlier, that lack of hope and division and ugliness. So I just wanted to point that out, that it's similar to Russia and the way they operate.
Yeah, Matt, really appreciate the call to WMDX. Dale, about a minute and a half left. I'll let you use it however you want. I think you wanted to follow up a little bit on that down ballot voting this fall.
Well, let me just say, I hope that my friends and neighbors who so generously supported me for those 32 years will pay attention to the issues, listen to the candidates, and come to a conclusion that the Harris-Waltz team is the best for our future, and we'll get out and vote. I'll say it again, we'll get out and vote because it is so important. Our future depends on it.
Dale Schultz, former Senate Majority Leader, still a Republican. And Dale, I think that's a big, I think that's what makes this endorsement more powerful, because you're not a MAGA Republican. You're of the old ilk of Republicans. And the fact that you're like, you just got off that German stubbornness, like, I'm not going anywhere, you know, because you still believe what you believe.
Yep. And you know what? I think being an independent sort of a cuss is, and a bit of a bad lad is what made me so endearing.
I think you're right. Dale Schultz, big announcement. He's endorsing Harris-Waltz. Thank you very much, Dale. We appreciate it.
You bet, Todd.
Come on back. We'll learn more about Wisconsin Badger football and talk about adversity with Brady Ewing. Not going to want to miss it on the Todd Allball Show.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap, Eau Claire, the Valley's home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
CBS News Brief. Hurricane Milton is now blamed for at least 17 deaths in Florida. Danielle McMasters rode out the storm in West Palm Beach with her husband and two daughters.
My first instinct was fear, but her first instinct was faith. And so when she said, pray, mommy, pray, I knew. I said, God is going to protect us.
Former President Donald Trump is requesting military aircraft to escort him during the final weeks of the presidential campaign. CBS's Nicole Killian reports.
In a statement, the Secret Service reiterated Trump is receiving the highest levels of protection and will remain vigilant, while President Biden said he's authorized extra security.
Boeing has announced plans to cut 10% of its workforce as the machinist strike continues.
Boeing already held nearly $58 million in debt this summer. Now a new S&P Global report estimates the company is losing more than $1 billion a month from the strike.
KIRO's Madeline Attili in Seattle. CBS News Brief. I'm Linda Kenyon.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
It's the Bucks and the Bulls. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports NBA. The Milwaukee Bucks getting ready to host the Chicago Bulls Monday night. Milwaukee still looking for their first win in the preseason. They're 0-2. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers playing at Rutgers today. We'll have a recap of the game coming up tonight. NFL, Packers placing tight end Luke Musgrave on injured reserve. He'll be out at least 4 weeks due to an ankle injury. The Packers hosting the Cardinals tomorrow. And wide receiver Romeo Doubs spoke to reporters for the first time since he was suspended last weekend for one game. Doubs did not want to go into details, but said it was a personal struggle as he'd been in contact with his family.
Yes, I got the family together again. I said there were some things going on off the field. So as far as just the organization, staff, players, there's nothing going on. So I just want to make myself clear there. But again, if we're just talking about the moment, I'm just thankful that I'm still here. It's a great staff, great players, great support. So
that's Packers wide receiver Romeo Doubs with Sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
With weather, I'm Corey Hartman. Some sprinkles or light showers today, otherwise mostly cloudy, highs near 60, partly cloudy, 40 tonight. Chance of showers for Sunday, quite breezy with highs in the mid-50s, and northwest winds up to 35 miles per hour. Monday, sunshine and 52.
Right now, 40 degrees.
Most people out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. Talk to someone if you're struggling with mental health, because most people out here really care. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
Matt Nair on air.
She's the fabulous farm babe. She is Pam Yonke. One of the reports that you guys did from last week was about the cow photographers.
When you go to World Dairy Expo, it never ceases to amaze me. Hair dryers, goop for their hair, for their hooves, everything. When it's time for them to go potty, somebody walks around behind them with a bucket. Now that's pampering, if you ask me.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Worldwide Schoolhouse behind us, the birthplace of the Republican Party. Executive Director of the Ripon Area Chamber of Commerce, Mandy Kimes.
Whether you love politics or you aren't even interested, there is something here, because those ideals and values and lessons and courage can influence us today to be active citizens and to be willing to take a stand. And really, ordinary people in an ordinary place doing extraordinary things.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
That first time seeing my son, I feel like my life did a 180. He really a definition of like why he loves somebody.
Through all of fatherhood's firsts, never stop being a dad. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I talk with the vice president of the Bartell Theater in Madison. Steve Knoll joins me to talk about the scary movies you can see all month, and we discuss the anniversary of Pulp Fiction.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Truth wherever it may lead and having fun doing it. Welcome back to the Todd Alba Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 34 minutes past the hour of 1 o'clock on this Thursday, October 10th, 2024. Mr. Zommer's on the board, Todd behind the mic, and many thanks to Kelly Call for joining us once again. How about that, Mr. Zommer's? I mean, taking time out of his, he's a busy guy, and he comes, talks to us about this great new film, Just a Bit Outside, closing in some theaters today opening and others. Check justabitoutside.com.
Or justabitoutsidethemovie.com.
Thank you for the correction. Justabitoutsidethemovie.com. And also marcustheaters.com.
If you haven't seen the movie and you heard Kelly's passion talking about it here, that passion is very evident in watching the film.
That's a good way to put it. You can tell there's a lot of love put into that by the proud Badger alum. And right now at 35 minutes past the hour, we can try and turn to another proud Badger alum. She is here in the studio. We appreciate it so very much. A guest that who is a Wisconsin State archaeologist, has a lot of experience in Wisconsin's and the Midwestern United States archaeologically scene. And also her work has spanned public, private, and educational sectors of archaeology amongst her many degrees. She has a PhD in anthropology from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We welcome Dr. Amy Roseborough to the program. Dr. Roseborough, thanks for coming in.
Oh, no, thank you for having me today.
Well, you know, we were out in Los Angeles last week to cover Wisconsin-USC game, and we had a chance to catch up with Kelly and his production partner on this movie, Sean. But you've traveled a lot. There are Badgers everywhere, right?
All over the place. And Packers even further than that.
Right? Yeah, right. Yeah, we're a passionate lot. But I think, to me, the University of Wisconsin and the system, I know now universities or whatever it's called now, but it's the Wisconsin idea, let's just put it that way, that the borders of our state are the borders of our university. And I appreciate you coming in because this is kind of a niche thing. I know not niche to you, but perhaps there's a lot of Wisconsinites that don't even know that we have a state archaeologist and what that person does.
Oh, and many states have a state archaeologist. So we're all over the place, you know,
right?
At least 50 of us. And Guam.
Really?
And Guam.
And Guam. Oh, that's fantastic. So tell us a little bit about where you grew up and kind of what drew you into archaeology and this vocation.
Oh, my. So grew up, if my accent may betray, in the Ozark Mountains. So I'm a little bit of a hillbilly.
I didn't get it that way. That's great.
Yeah. So, right at the Missouri-Arkansas line. And I had family members that lived in Washington, D.C., and we'd go see the Smithsonian, and we'd look at all the amazing history there. And especially the dinosaurs, because when you're a little kid,
right,
it's all about dinosaurs. Yeah. And so many people think, archaeology, that's dinosaurs. And I was one of those kids. And nowadays, like, no, it's not dinosaurs. Not at all. Something completely different. But, you know, when I found out what archaeology actually was, you know, the study of the human past, like, okay, that's even better. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still people around, not that many, you know, T-Rexes roaming up and down the streets.
Right. Would it be fair to say you're kind of the Indiana Jones of the University of Wisconsin?
No.
Okay, not really.
I don't mind snakes, dislike spiders, and I'm no good with a bullwhip at all.
So you went into this vocation and your PhD here at UW-Madison. Just coming here and studying, is that what you kind of, like a lot of folks, fell in love with Wisconsin or Madison, you wanted to stay?
Absolutely it. So my undergraduate advisor in Missouri was actually an alumni. And he said, you've got to go to UW. And came time for master's, Arkansas offered me a little bit more money. Like, all right, we'll try that. But one of the professors there, again, UW alumni, he said, you got to go to Madison. So when it came time for PhD, like, oh, I don't know, that's awfully far north. You guys have a lot of snow and ice and things. But, you know, I survived that first winter. So I thought, okay, you know, I'm alive. I can keep going. And, you know, Wisconsin really did turn out to be a fantastic place. I have fallen in love with it. It's a beautiful, beautiful state with some amazing archaeology. And I am sometimes beside myself that now I get to talk about that archaeology and bring it to people all the time. So this is just the dream job.
Well, it's a dream to have you here because what captured our attention, and I think this became a big news story across the state, was this discovery of an indigenous canoe that had been, I'll use the word whether it's proper or not, buried under water and silt and resurrected. And can you tell us a little bit, a brief overview about the timeline of this exciting discovery in Lake Mendota?
Oh, yeah. The canoe was, a surprise for sure. So the canoe came to our attention in 2021. So right in the middle of the COVID pandemic, we were actually in between state archaeologists at the time. And Tamara Thompson, so she's a diver with our program. She normally focuses on Great Lakes shipwreck. She's a member of the Women's Diving Hall of Fame. And she was just sort of messing around in the lake on a beautiful June Saturday. Mm-hmm. She says, swimming along, picking up trash and chasing fish. Right. And her partner hit the halfway point in her air and stopped and signaled that they need to turn around. And when Tammy looked down, she was hovering directly over the exposed end of the canoe.
Wow.
And that got the whole thing started.
Uh-huh. And so did she realize what it was when she saw it or what it could be? Or is it like, wow, that's something just not normal. We need to investigate that more.
Oh, she knew what it was.
Really?
Yeah. If, wow. Of all the people that could have come across the canoe, she's the perfect person to do it. She had been looking at dugout canoes in little historical societies and museums all across Wisconsin, helping a grad student with UW-Madison, you know, their connection there. And so she knew what they looked like out of the water. And then here was one still in the water. And she gives me a call, said, Amy, come out on the boat with me. Like, it's a Saturday. It's a gorgeous Saturday. I'm like, oh, sure, why not? And that, yeah, she said, there are these weird rocks in it. I'm like, okay, I can't dive.
Right.
Yeah. I'm very much a terrestrial archaeologist. And so show me the rocks. So she took some pictures, showed them, and she brought a few up. And we looked. And, yeah, these are actual artifacts.
Wow.
And so it turned out there was a set of net weights. Stone net wakes still in the canoe. And that should have been our first indicator that it was a little older than we expected to have stone tools in there. But at the time, we wouldn't let ourselves think it was that old.
What for those non-educated people, these types of things, what does that really mean? So they're like farm tools? What sort of tool? Or canoeing tools? Or what?
So they're just weights. So there's a set of seven rocks. They're all a little bit bigger than a deck of playing cards, but they're thin. Mm-hmm. And someone had very carefully picked up stones on the beach that already had sort of notches or grooves on each side where you could attach a cord. And if they couldn't find anything that was quite right, they would chip a groove there. And those were used to weight down the bottom of a gill net. In other words, there'd be a net held vertically in the water. You'd have floats, wood, or bottle gourds or something tied to the top to keep the top vertical. And then these stone weights would keep the bottom hanging down, and you'd wait for fish to swim into it and then go out later and get dinner.
So can you tell us the story? I understand, and I haven't heard this anyplace else. There's a story about eagles when this was discovered.
Yeah, the second canoe.
There's a second one after that.
So, yeah, the first canoe set off, you know, some survey. A lot of things went into high gear once we got the date back. So we got a new state archaeologist, Dr. James Skibo, came in. And the first thing he asked, is there anything I should know about? Well, there's a canoe in the lake. And we got some radiocarbon dates. We thought maybe 300 years old. Mm-hmm. And it came back at 1,200 years old. And okay, we've got something new. And that set off survey. And a year later, Tammy's out on the lake, and we get a text message. Hey, guys, I found another one. Not kidding. And what?
Wow.
So
in the same vicinity.
Same vicinity, just a few hundred feet away. And that changed everything for us. Like, well, okay, now it's just not a weird little shipwreck. Mm-hmm. We have a whole site here. And again, we just, okay, we will recover the second one because the radiocarbon date for that one came back at 3,000 years old.
Wow.
Which blew our minds. We had, by that point, we had a bunch of tribal collaborators, representatives of the historic preservation departments for the Ho-Chunk and Bad River Band, Menominee. We were in contact with a ton of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the second canoe came up, we had a huge crowd gathered on the beach. And as it arrived, everyone, of course, is looking at the canoe. And I kind of glanced up, kind of, you know, taking a breath, like, oh, boy, we did it again, you know. And an eagle comes down low over the beach, over everyone's heads, lifts up again. And I'm looking around. Did anyone else see that? And a couple other people are nodding at me. They saw it, too. I'm like, okay. The canoe is taken across town to Dickinson Street on the Isthmus to our preservation facility. And I followed a little bit behind. When I get out, someone said, did you see the eagle? Well, yeah, they came down right over the beach, and they went, beach? No. When we opened the door to the truck here at the building, an eagle came down and then went back up again. I'm like, okay, that's a little spooky, you know. So there are a lot of things about this discovery that have kind of raised an eyebrow or two here and there.
And did any of the folks from any of the tribes that were there, did they see this? Did they equate any sort of, you know, indigenous spirituality to this?
Not that they've said. And I have a feeling, you know, if they did, probably caving it to themselves.
Right.
I just know it put the hair up on the back of my neck.
Yeah. I mean, just in hearing you recount, I didn't know the whole story. I just knew that, you know, there were quote unquote eagles involved. But yeah, I mean, whether someone is a person of spirituality or not, when you have something like that happen, I'm sure it had to just be one of those moments when you're like, this is unique and something I may never experience again.
Oh, absolutely. You know, until the next time Tammy goes swimming in the lake.
So the first one was 12 or 1300 years old?
1200 years old.
And the second was 3000 years old.
3000. And we thought we'd be lucky if the first one was 200 years old.
Right.
And, you know, it shows what we know.
So yeah. You said there was kind of a, because there's a second one, it turns out this is a significant site. And by the way, we're talking to Dr. Amy Rosenbro, Wisconsin State archaeologist, about this find, this site of indigenous folks in Lake Mendota. What other things have you found from this site? What does it mean significantly in the state's history?
Well, more canoes, for one thing.
Really?
So when we raised the first one, mm-hmm. you know, pieces of wood were coming up, and Dr. Skibo was looking at them, and he's like, oh, this is a little weird. This one looks worked, but it must have fallen off the end of the first one. Mm-hmm. And we kind of made a note of that. We'll figure out how it fits onto it later when everything's, you know, prepared and curated. And then when they were excavating the second one, they had four divers, one on each corner of it, and three divers finished, got it free of the sediment and came up, and then one diver did not come back up. I was like, oh, what's taking him so long? So they went back down, and he's still working away, you know, fanning the silt. As you can imagine, all the silt's being stirred up, so the visibility's not good. He's doing a lot of this by feel. And they realized he had finished his bit and was now working on the canoe under the second canoe.
Oh, my gosh.
So they're canoe on a canoe. And that's, yeah, okay, now things are getting even more complicated. So Tammy went back and she surveyed. She waited till the visibility was about as good as it gets. She found more pieces of worked wood. We got radiocarbon dates from the canoe under the canoe. We got radiocarbon dates from the pieces that had been brought up before and realized, okay, we've got at least 10 canoes, either whole or in fragments at this site. And we're seeing what we think is an ancient beach under the lake. Wow. And there must have been a village or a living spot very close by. And these canoes represent thousands of years of people leaving them for the winter under the water and then not coming back or forgetting where they were or, that canoe was worn out anyway, I'll make a new one. Mm. Just thousands of years of canoes building up. Probably not just at that location, too. I have a feeling if you could drain Lake Mendota and the lakes around here, you'd have a bathtub ring of canoes around each one.
So what is it that over time that just through erosion or other things that the lake has grown or how, are you allowed to tell us how far down these are under the water?
Well, they're about 25 to 30 feet. They're pretty far down. And the lake, you know, of course, has been raised up a modern lock and dam system. It's about 5 feet higher than it was. But even so, that's a fair amount of water. And that was one of the things that confused us. Like, why are they so far out and so deep down? Well, UW, you know, began bringing them in. Their limnology department, you know, the most studied lake in the world, Lake Mendota. And so they have done pollen cores and they've done sediment samples. And what they're saying is for a good part of history, Lake Mendota was much, much smaller than it is today. And periodically there will be a drought that is bad enough that the Ahr River will just turn off. Mm-hmm. Nothing feeds the lake. It evaporates down and you get these old shorelines, you know, to reemerge again.
Yeah.
So it's just, we're just seeing glimpses of that history. And the canoes are telling exactly the same story. The wood that the canoes are made out of goes from the kind of wood you would see in open prairie savanna environments over time changing to closed canopy forest, you know, showing that the climate is changing and the forests are regrowing. And so then you're just seeing drought mm-hmm. near the end.
That's absolutely fascinating. We're talking with Dr. Amy Rosenbro. She is the Wisconsin State archaeologist and got to take a break here coming up shortly, doctor. But when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about can common everyday Wisconsin folk like me and most of our listeners, will we ever get a chance to see these canoes? How are they preserved, number one? Because, I mean, I can't just like set them on a shelf somewhere, I would think. And what's ahead? Dr. Amy Rosenbro, Wisconsin State archaeologist, is our guest. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to the Todd Allball Show right here across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. 9 before the hour of 2 o'clock at the top of the hour. CBS News Radio or ABC News Radio, depending upon which station across the state you're listening to. Little sports and weather update, and then into the Maggie Dawn Show all across Wisconsin. Maggie Dawn every afternoon from 2 until 4, followed by the Dom Salvia Show, and then Pete Schwabba and Nightlight here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Right now, we are honored to be joined by the Wisconsin State Archaeologist. She is Dr. Amy Roseborough, who is here talking about this. It just blows my mind, Doctor. I'll be honest. This archaeological find in Lake Mendota, which those that might be from around the state, where is Lake Mendota? It's in Dane County. It's one of the two main lakes that border the isthmus and or create the isthmus in Madison. It's the bigger of the lakes. It's on the side of the UW campus. So if you've ever been down to the terrace, Todd and Kelly Call's favorite spot to watch the sunset, that's the lake we're talking about, right, Doctor?
Absolutely. I mean, right out in Madison's back door.
Yeah. And here we are, a diver happens upon this. We think it's one canoe, or you folks thought it was one, and you stumble upon essentially a site of an ancient civilization.
That's just it. And, you know, canoes that represent thousands of years of indigenous history in Madison, and they really remind us that, you know, this is indigenous territory. Yeah, the ancestors of the Ho-Chunk were here. The Ho-Chunk themselves were here. And then you get back thousands of years. Our oldest canoe fragment is 4,500 years old. By that point, you're talking about the ancestors of most of Wisconsin's Native nations, if not all. So it's a story of, you know, persistence and resilience and just the connection to this land. And we've been absolutely honored to be working with our Native nations as collaborators on this. Mm-hmm. To see, okay, how should these canoes be handled going forward? How should they be displayed? How should they be interpreted? And I think we have some amazing things coming up with their help for the people of Wisconsin.
I don't want to gloss over something you just said. 4,500 years old is the oldest canoe fragments you've come across so far, correct?
Yes.
4,500.
4,500.
Has the state archaeologist or department, have you ever found artifacts dating back that far?
We have. You know, it's not uncommon. And the oldest artifacts we have in Wisconsin documented are around 14,000 years old. Wow. So right at the end of the Ice Age. Uh-huh. You know, they're little stone ships that are connected actually with mammoth and mastodon bones in Kenosha County. Mm-hmm. And you've asked the Ho-Chunk, the Menominee, Dakota, they say, oh, we've been here since time immemorial. You know, you shouldn't be surprised. So I don't know why we are.
Right.
But these are
us, you know, as European white descendants, yeah. I guess. Oh, wow, there's something 4,500 years old.
Wow. but there are stone tools. You know, stone survives almost forever. Mm-hmm. And you, any farmer in Wisconsin can tell you, oh, I've picked this up or that right. up. And, you know, sometimes people send us pictures or they bring us the points. And we can say, yeah, that's 5,000 years old. That's 8,000 years old. That's 10,000 years old. And, you know, people have been on this land for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to something perishable, wood, ooh, that's new, right. And an entire watercraft. You know, the pickup truck of the day. That's an amazing find.
Well, 3.5 minutes left. I don't want to go without asking to get the answer on this one. How are these artifacts preserved, and will there become a day working with the tribal leaders, indigenous folks in Wisconsin, where all Wisconsinites, all folks will be able to look at these things, to view them?
Oh, they sure will. Yeah. So the canoes are currently sitting in a bath. It's a substance called polyethylene glycol, or PEG. If you've ever eaten a Skittle, you've eaten PEG.
Really?
It's a non-toxic wax. It's also a component in vaccines. So it took us a little while to get enough of this to conserve the consumer. It was going someplace else for a while.
Imagine.
But they are soaking in this. It's going to remove the water from the wood and help support it once they're dried out. Because if we took them out now, they'd just crumble to dust. So the polyethylene glycol, or the PEG, is preserving them. Then they'll sit in that bath for about another year and a half. Then they'll go to a freeze-drying facility in Texas for a couple of months. And then by then, we hope that our new history center will be built on Madison's Capitol Square. So it's scheduled to open in 2027. And canoes are going to have pride of place in the Human Landscapes Gallery with lots of interpretation.
Yeah, as well they should, in my opinion. And for those of us who work and live in Madison, there's a demolition going down right now, or on right now, where the former State Historical Society was, and that's going to be the site eventually, correct?
That will be the site, yeah, right next to the Capitol. So perfect for all the school groups that come in. So they're going to be able to go visit the Capitol and then go see some canoes.
About a minute left here. How significant is this find in your world?
It's huge. It is absolutely huge. So when the first canoe came up and was recovered, we actually made Time Team's top 10 discoveries of the year. And if you're an archaeologist, that's like the Hall of Fame.
Wow.
You know, we beat out 30,000-year-old footprints in White Sands National Monument, and they're a little annoyed at us for that. But, you know, hey.
A throwdown of archaeologists.
Yeah, Time Team. So Time Team's based in Britain. So this story went global. You know, when it was picked up at Japan and Russia and Great Britain, Ireland. And so, yeah. Everyone likes canoes.
And I think everybody loves, or most people love, Wisconsin history. And in a time where, you know, certain events that are happening in 2 or 3 weeks here divide us, this is a great unifying story that all of us of Wisconsinites should be proud of, I think, to A, we've discovered this, and through your great work and your colleagues, it is being preserved. And there's a story being told. It's not lost on me that Monday is Columbus, quote-unquote, / Indigenous Peoples Day, and now we're talking about this, and again, proving that Indigenous folks were here thousands of years before any of the rest of us.
And it's their story to tell, so we've just been, very honored to help, you know, bring this forward.
Yeah, I know our friend Robert Pilot, the host of Native Roots Radio, who is on this network every night, just somebody I admire at telling these stories that need to be told of Indigenous folks all across the state of Wisconsin. Really appreciate it, Dr. Amy Roseborough, Wisconsin State Archaeologist. Thank you for coming and spending time with us today.
Okay, thank you.
Always a pleasure. Also, thanks to J.B. Van Hollen, former Attorney General, Mandela Barnes, former Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, Kelly Call, producer of the great new film, Just a Bit Outside, and Dr. Amy Roseborough. And, of course, Mr. Zommer is our wonderful producer and engineer, and all of you for listening. Tom Allball saying, whatever you believe in, whatever you're fighting for, do not give up. Keep banging your drum. Maggie Dawn is next. Have a great day.